There we go.
He isn't able to see that the rest of us sometimes fall asleep.
Yeah. That's right. So we love you, Valerie.
Yes.
We love you, Irene. We love you, Kathy. So here's our cheat sheet for the day. I was floored by this particular concept. In fact, really, it's a sermon I probably shouldn't have preached, except to not preach on this piece of human experience that's not my experience, I think isn't fair to the women in our fellowship to not have this piece. And it's not fair to the guys in our fellowship to not hear it. So I offered this one for the team because it was very difficult for me to put together. But I found the metaphor extremely fruitful. And we're going to explore some of that. Some of the context for yesterday's scripture that I hinted at in some of how I preached and what my outline was. But we didn't quite get it. Couldn't spell it all out because we just didn't have time to do it. So we're going to go to Isaiah chapter 42. I'm going to start at the beginning of the chapter, which is where I really, really wanted to start yesterday, but for time considerations, we moved it along. So I don't know how much you have learned about Isaiah. What do you know?
We've read Isaiah.
Read it three times?
Yeah.
Oh, it's good stuff, isn't it?
No.
There are places that are ugly, and there are places that are glorious.
Yeah, it's really difficult to piece through all.
Yeah.
So
Isaiah is a prophet living in the 800s AD, BC. Maybe into the 700s. He prophesies. First, in the first section is prophesying all sorts of trouble for the countries round about, including Israel and Judah. Well, Israel's gone by then, so Judah. About where we're picking it up, and well, about chapter 40, the tone changes. And instead of this piece that's very difficult to read, it's all about comforting. It starts looking up. And Isaiah's looking forward now to the return of the exiles. And then that gets even stronger as you get to the last segment that runs from about 55 to 66. Some people think that, couldn't have been it the same person because they're so different in tone. I think that's a fair argument to say that they're very different in tone. I think that they're making an assumption that prophecy can't be prophecy, that God can't change tone. That I don't know that you can make that argument necessarily without some caveats. So I'm willing to make space for this to be the same Isaiah who wrote all the pieces of it. But there are definitely three different sections to it. We are in that second section where he is comforting his people. And in particular, just, you know, flip back with your page just to look at the headings. Look at the beginning of chapter 40. Comfort, comfort my people, says your God. Speak tenderly to Jerusalem. And proclaim to her that her hard service has been completed, that her sin has been paid for, that she has received from the Lord's hand double for all her sins. That's really great, great tone setter. Of course, the end of chapter 40 is the rising up on the wings of eagles, running and not being weary. But we're going to get to chapter 42 here. And this chapter 42 marks the first of the servant songs of Isaiah. We'll talk more about that in just a second here. So would one of you read the Chris, would you read the first four verses there?
Okay. Here's my servant whom I uphold, my chosen one in whom I delight. I will put my spirit on him, and he will bring justice to the nations. He will not shout or cry out or raise his voice in the streets. A bruised reed he will not break, and a smoldering wick he will not snuff out. In faithfulness he will bring forth justice. He will not falter or be discouraged till he establishes justice on earth. In his teaching the islands will put their hope.
I love that. Isn't that magnificent? So as you're reading that section, we're in Isaiah 42. As you're reading that section, what strikes you? Oh, we're working the same one from last week.
Oh, okay. And this was the sermon.
Yes.
The same one. Beautiful.
But we're going to spend a little bit more time with the Bible piece of it than you and I did last week.
Oh, good. No. I'm just so glad because it's
going to be so good. What's interesting, so last week I was supposed to preach this on Sunday, but because of pastor appreciation, I didn't. But I still did it in Bible study. It was just Clara and me. And I didn't stick very close to the Bible. We just had a free-ranging discussion. And Clara so convicted me, or the Spirit convicted me in our conversation, that I felt like if I didn't preach on it, I was failing our fellowship. So thank you for.
Well, you're so welcome. That when I saw this, I just grabbed this on my way in, but all the way up the stairs, a couple hours ago, I kept thinking, God is a woman in labor, and I kept thinking, because that's it's pretty incredible.
Mm. Oh,
the transformation and having this new being.
I was floored. So we're going to get to that piece of things a little bit farther on. But we're reading chapter 42, and Chris just read the opening verses about the first servant song. So what, as you were kind of hearing that or reading that, what struck you? And I do love that Quest Bible that you're reading from. Mm.
So it's about your relationship with God.
Yeah.
Absolutely. About relationship with God. Yeah.
God's talking about Isaiah.
Isaiah's talking about what his relationship with God is and therefore what God's relationship with him is. If you go back to your first bit.
So this is one of the interesting, you've asked a question really behind that, is who is this chosen one?
Here is my servant.
Yeah.
Who is my servant?
Yeah.
Who is that? So there are some different ideas. One is that it's Isaiah. Another is that it's Cyrus, chosen to bring God's people home again. And another still, when early Christians were reading, this is one of the places they came to say, well, wait a minute, we just saw that. And that was Jesus. So, you have to be careful looking too much at the Old Testament through New Testament eyes. But the New Testament, the disciples looked at it and they said, wow, that was him. What are the clues that would say that could be Jesus for you as you take a look at that?
For me, this one is not as strong of a hint about Jesus as some of the other passages.
Yes, that's right.
Isaiah. Those to me are really bold and stand out.
Oh, yeah.
This one to me, it could be, this is what a servant of God This is a definition. It's not necessarily Jesus is not necessarily sorry. So to me, it's not so as specific as the other passages.
I agree. I agree. The thing that I want you to kind of focus in on, the ideas that might tip the disciples or the apostles towards that understanding, is what I'm after there.
Well, I mean, you can say in faithfulness he will bring forth justice. He will not falter or be discouraged, because that's the whole thing about the cross and taking it and doing it.
Now, remember that in Hebrew and in Greek, in Hebrew, the word nations and the word for Gentiles is the same. So this is not just for Jews anymore, this justice. It is for everybody.
The islands
is interesting, isn't that? I don't know I don't know enough Hebrew to really understand that particular connection, but I thought that was interesting. I love the gentleness that I see in verses 2 and 3. Good. All right, so let's go on. So John, would you start at verse 5?
This is what God the Lord says. The creator of the heavens, who stretches them out, who spreads out the earth with all that springs from it, who gives breath to its people and life to those who walk on it. I, the Lord, have called you in righteousness. I will take hold of your hand. I will keep you and will make you to be a covenant of the people, for the people, and a light for the Gentiles, to open eyes that are blind, to free captives from prison, and to release from the dungeon those who sit in darkness. I am the Lord, that is my name. I will not yield my glory to another or my praise to idols. Is that the first time the Gentiles are mentioned in the Bible?
I struggle to know. You mean that word for Gentiles?
That word for Gentiles, as opposed to naming all the nations.
That is a great question. I would have to.
You don't often see it in the Old Testament, whereas you see it all the time in Paul's letters.
Right. I can look that up for us. But let's go ahead and mush on with that. If there's something else that strikes you as you're going along here, what do you think about this section?
To do these things.
Yep.
I'm doing this. I will keep you in it.
It's sort of a promise.
Yeah, it is. This is what you're going to do as my servant.
Yeah.
As my...
The use of the word covenant, I think, is particularly interesting there. That person, whoever that person is the covenant. Which I think is unusual. That person is the relationship. That person is the promise, the agreement. I think that's really interesting. So the word Gentile...
Mine says elect to the nations, and his says elect to the Gentiles. So I'm glad we just learned that.
That is the same. Yeah. One of the things that's interesting about that particular thing is that it seems like it is translated as Gentiles only in Ezra, Nehemiah, and Isaiah. So that's very insightful. I hadn't even thought to to take a look at that.
Yeah, because there's lots of mentions of all of the nations, and not only the nations of Israel, but the nations of the East and the nations of the North are mentioned at various times in the Old Testament. But I can't remember it being grouped together as the Gentiles.
No, I just the non-believers.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's another connection. There's always these connections between Isaiah and the New Testament, and that's another one.
Yes.
You get, if we believe this is a prophecy, there's an awful lot of prophecy in Isaiah which reveals itself in the New Testament.
Yeah.
Not just Jesus, but other things about spreading the word and things like that.
Yep.
They all come out from here.
Yeah. Yeah, and one of the things that's interesting is that it's peppered throughout Isaiah, because we often read from Isaiah 9 and Isaiah 11 and Isaiah 3 at Christmas time. And we could read from Isaiah 42. We often read from Isaiah 49 and 51, which that's more servant song material. But we often read that actually in Lent.
Yeah.
For he was pierced for our transgressions and wounded for our healing. By his stripes we are healed. That's really extraordinary language. So you can't just chalk it up to a particular section of Isaiah. Has to do with the messianic prophecy. You can find it all the way through. Did you notice the reference to the Spirit in that section? It's hidden in that word breath, because breath and spirit and wind are all the same in Hebrew and Greek. It's ruach. So in verse 5, who gives spirit to his to its people. Very interesting stuff. All right, so Clara, would you read 8 to 14 for us?
Okay. Oh. I am the Lord, that is my name. My glory I give to no other, nor my praise to idols. See, the former things have come to pass, and a new thing I now declare. Before they spring forth, I tell you of them. Sing the Lord a new song, his praise from the end of the earth. Let the sea roar and all that fills it, the coastlands and their inhabitants. Let the desert and its towns lift up their voice, the villages that Kedar inhabits. Let the inhabitants of Selah sing for joy. Let them shout from the tops of the mountains. Let them give glory to the Lord and declare his praise in the coastlands. The Lord goes forth like a soldier, like a warrior. He stirs up his fury. He cries out. He shouts aloud. He shows himself mighty against his foe.
What do you connect with in that section? Or have questions about in that section? Who's speaking?
One of my problems with Isaiah is it's hard to tell sometimes. It jumps back and forth so much. I mean, for instance, 8 and 9 says, I am the Lord, that is my name.
Yep.
But then when you get into 10, sing to the Lord a new song, his praise from the ends of the earth. It could be God speaking to say, this is what I want.
Or there are no quotations in the original language.
It could be Isaiah saying, this is what you should be doing.
Absolutely. It's a very insightful thought.
Mm.
Absolutely. And it could be that you know, he's kind of pulling a Bob Dole. You remember Bob Dole? He never said the word I. He always said, Bob Dole thinks this. Bob Dole will do that.
That's how Harry talks like that, too.
Harry says. So, I could see that paragraph being God kind of speaking in the third person.
Sing to the Lord in a song,
it's like a song.
But then by 13, the Lord goes forth like a soldier, like a warrior. So it changes in that 13th verse.
Yes.
He shows himself mighty.
So the sing to the Lord a new song is actually Psalm 98.
Okay, so there you have
it. It is not your imagination. It goes, sing to the Lord a new song, for he has done marvelous things. His right hand and his holy arm have worked salvation for him. As a priest in the temple, which Isaiah was, I'm sure he was familiar with that psalm. So he echoes it here. Or God echoes it here. Depending on your perspective on that. My Bible says verse 14 starts a new section in which God is speaking.
Well, there's quotation marks in mine.
And mine starts a new section.
So although I stopped with verse 14 yesterday, and I did that deliberately because once I get farther into the paragraph, into the stanza, it opens up a can of worms, and then we have to sit and we have to explain that together. But let's read it together as a chunk the way it was meant to be.
Oh, okay.
So would somebody read that? Oh, I guess I'll read it since I'm next on the list. So we'll read 14 to 17. For a long time I have kept silent. I have been quiet and held myself back. Now, like a woman in childbirth, I cry out, I gasp and pant. I will lay waste the mountains and hills and dry up all their vegetation. I will turn rivers into islands and dry up the pools. I will lead the blind by ways they have not known. Along unfamiliar paths I will guide them. I will turn the darkness into light before them, and make the rough places smooth. These are the things I will do. I will not forsake them. But those who trust in idols, who say to images, you are our gods, will be turned back in utter shame. What's easy, what's hard? That section. What strikes you or rings for you?
Doing is all new, things that haven't been done before. Turning the rivers into islands and drying up the pools and leading the blind by roads they haven't been on before. Everything's happening new.
Right. Yep.
But where are they going? I feel like I need to keep reading because it doesn't exactly say.
Good. All right, so let's go. Let's keep going. Go ahead, Chris.
Okay. Are we starting at 18?
18.
Hear you deaf, look you blind and see. Who is blind but my servant, and deaf like the messenger I send? Who is blind like the one in covenant with me, blind like the servant of the Lord? You have seen many things, but you pay no attention. Your ears are open, but you do not listen. It pleased the Lord, for the sake of his righteousness, to make his law great and glorious. But this is a people plundered and looted, all of them trapped in pits or hidden away in prisons. They have become plunder, with no one to rescue them. They have been made loot, with no one to say, send them back.
Oh, yeah, we got
to
finish.
Which of you will listen to this or pay close attention in time to come? Who handed Jacob over to become loot and Israel to the plunderers? Was it not the Lord against whom we have sinned? For they would not follow his ways. They did not obey his law. So he poured out on them his burning anger, the violence of war. It enveloped them in flames. Yet they did not understand. It consumed them, but they did not take it to heart.
Oh! Wow. All right, but...
Ooh, ooh.
Yeah. So we have to start chapter 43. We just can't leave it in that place. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Clara, would you read it, verse 1 there?
Yeah. But now thus says the Lord, he who created you, O Jacob, he who formed you, O Israel, do not fear, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by name. You are mine.
Oh, yes, please.
When you pass through the waters, I will be with you, and through the waters they shall not overwhelm you. When you